Welcome to Beyond the Crops, the podcast where we share the real and raw behind the scenes of conventional farming and what it's like to raise a family on America's backroads. I'm Jenna.
And I'm MP.
Today we have Bryce and Kate with us from Precision Planting, which we're so excited to get some insight from them and a little bit background on Precision Planting and what all they do. Bryce and Kate, do you both want to give us a little background on yourselves and your position at Precision Planting and what all you do?
So I'm Kate Moore. I've been with Precision Planting for 3.5 years on the marketing team. Currently, I am the digital marketing manager. So myself and my team oversee website, social media, ambassadors, things like that. My husband and I farm in central Illinois. So we have corn and soybeans as well as alfalfa for our cattle operation. Kind of like you guys, we do sell direct to consumer as well. So dive in a little bit there. And then we have 2 boys. So Levi is 2 and Silas is 9 months old. And we just got a puppy 2 weeks ago. So why not?
Oh man, you're busy.
Yeah.
That's a lot to juggle in addition to a corporate position. But you're not the first person from Precision Planting that I've heard say that they have agriculture-based businesses outside of their job. Is that pretty common?
Yeah, we have a lot of farmers on our team.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, Bryce, you're up.
How about you, Bryce?
Yeah. Okay. So Bryce Baker on the marketing team at Precision Planting. I've been at Precision Planting 14 years come next month. So spent some time on the sales side, working with dealers, working with OEM partners, and then led the marketing team since 2017. So really enjoy it. Enjoy working with Kate and the rest of our team. I grew up real close to where Precision Planting's headquarters sits, the building that we're sitting in right now here in central Illinois. I did not grow up on a farm. I kind of have farming in my grandparents on both sides of the family, but they had all gotten out of farming by the time I was born. But growing up in this area helped a lot of farmers, had opportunities to just milk cows, work with hogs, be in the field during harvest a lot. So really enjoyed that growing up. Still wish I could get in the field a little more than I'm able to now. So live close here in central Illinois, actually about a mile from Kate and Jared. With my wife, we have 3, an 8-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 3-year-old. A 3-year-old is also named Silas. So Kate and I each have a Silas, funny enough. and so not really involved in any broad scale farming. But we do have about 100 chickens on our place right now. so we'll have some meat chickens that we'll take in actually next week. And then we have a handful of egg layers and supply a few people some eggs on the side. So yeah, that's who I am and excited to spend some time talking with you today.
I wasn't going to say this because I never hint at baby names, but we have 3 boys and we don't know if our family's complete or not, but Levi was like, if we have a 4th boy, what would we name it that goes with our current names? And I said, I really like the name Silas. So that is crazy that you both have a Silas. It's not a common name. Funny. I don't
if
even
you
know
really
anybody.
Want a middle name. Both of our Silases are Silas James. So
oh, funny.
That too.
Yeah. That's
so
awesome.
So funny story. We had a meeting last July one day, an offsite team meeting. And, you know, we knew Kate was due anytime, ready to go anytime. And the next morning she texts him with a picture of a child and Silas James. And I said, wait, that's my son's name. Does she know? and so she knew the first name, not the middle name, but we ended up with the same first and middle
funny.
Name. So it's just a good name. Both
it
names
is.
Are just really
it is.
Good.
It's one big happy case. Precision Planting family.
There you go.
Love it.
Oh, too good.
Well, thank you guys so much for being here with us today. And honestly, for both Jenna and I, we've worked with you guys for a long time and worked with Precision Planting products, but we really appreciate your support, you know, couple moms starting a podcast and being on as our first set of interviewees for the podcast. So we wanted to have a discussion today about the planting pass and why it's so important. And that's a very free question for you guys to take any direction you want, but I want to hear your take on the planting pass.
So, you know, as you think about just raising crops, you know, there's a ton of effort and work that goes into it. But I guess the simplest way to break it down is that once the seed is put in the ground by the planter, from that point on, you're literally just trying to protect yield. So the maximum yield that any seed has is actually when it's still in the bag, because it has all of its potential and there's been no negative effects by weather, by insects, by anything like that. So why does planting matter? Is because it sets the highest yield potential that is possible. And from that point on, you're just trying to protect yield the rest of the season. And so there are things that you can point to the day of harvest, and you could look at deficiencies on a given plant or issues with a certain plant or the fruit, if we say ears of corn, the soybean pods, whatever it might be. But the fruit that any one single plant is producing the day of harvest, and you can look back and you could say, this late emergence, the way these roots developed, that's actually something that was caused the microsecond that that seed was placed in the ground. So why does it matter? Is because it's really setting the maximum yield that you can have. And from that point, you're just trying to protect it. So if you set with the planter in poor conditions or operated poorly, you actually can set a lower yield and then you have less to protect. And so if you lose, you know, you have a bad storm and it costs you 50 bushel, if we're talking corn, maybe it was off of 400 bushel of potential instead of 300 bushel of potential. So there's a difference there. So that's kind of how we look at it, is you've got to get that right, because then you're just protecting your maximum the rest of the season.
No pressure, right?
Exactly.
For the farmer.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. My husband's in the field right now, and I feel like I should be texting him, like, make sure you're doing everything right.
I suggest you don't, Jenna. I don't think this question, anybody would argue it, that the planting pass is most important. We were looking back, I actually have the little book here, of a really old Funk's hybrid, and it's from 1957, which is so funny because you like scroll through it and it's like, what to do, like how much grain you could fit in your silos. It's like, oh, okay, everything was in this little book back then. But the average yield in the United States was 46 bushels for corn in 1957. And now it's like, in the United States, I think like 170 something, obviously a little different here in Illinois. So I don't think anybody has ever argued that the planter pass is most important. I mean, your hybrids are changing, obviously. I just think farmers are smarter. They know what they know now. Maybe in the 50s, they didn't have all the knowledge that they have now, the technology. It's just amazing. I'm like, that's like 3x plus.
Yeah.
We can't discredit them. They did exactly what they could do.
Yeah, they did what they could at the time with the resources they had. And it's crazy how the technology that has advanced in agriculture that has allowed us to grow such higher yields.
I'm so glad you brought that for us to see or to hear and look at. Like, those are the kinds of relics that we need to keep to show our kids and just show them, like, in the future how far ag has come.
Yeah, we found this in a, you know, somewhere in the shop, who knows? And it was like, oh, this is the coolest thing of the day. Let's read all the way through it.
So speaking about technology and the advancements, what do you think has been the most impactful piece of technology precision planting has developed?
Yeah, in 30 years of precision planting, there's been a lot of different products brought to market, a lot of products that have been developed and not brought to market. You know, so it's kind of like saying, what's your favorite? It's hard to hone in on one, but if I had to hone in on one, it would be the 2020 monitor. And here's the reason why, is because as we kind of talk about, as Kate brought up, like improving yields over time, and farmers in 1957 doing as well as they could with the knowledge and information that they had, the 2020 really unlocked more knowledge for the farmer as he or she was planting, and continues to do that. So because of with the 2020 being able to see how the planter is performing, not just how many seeds are going in the ground, but how are they singulated? How are they spaced? Are we planting at the depth that the planter was set to? Are we compacting soil? Are we driving too fast or the correct speed? Just those things allowed a farmer, without adding any other systems, to improve the way the planter works. So again, back to the planter pass being the most important, this gives more information and more knowledge to make those changes. But the other reason I would say the 2020 has been the most impactful is then because beyond just the knowledge and measurements of things on the planter, there's the ability then to build off of that system with control systems. So there's a number of, I think, 10 or 11 other sensors and control systems that could be added to a 2020 to provide, you know, row by row controls of different things to optimize the way the planter works. So the base 2020 provides information and a farmer can jump out of the cab and make an adjustment. But if they need to do that, you know, 700 times in a field, that's not practical. And some of the additional control systems allow those adjustments to happen in a more automated fashion. And so with that, it's really advanced. You know, if we just step back a little bit from the 2020 from precision planting and you look at the last 15 years or so of planter technology, 15 years ago, there was minimal automation on a planter and minimal information on the monitor. And today, whether you're retrofitting the equipment you own or whether you're buying a brand new piece of machinery, a brand new planter, basically that type of information and automation is pretty much standard on any planter you would buy. And so really starting back with the 2020, it's really just that piece has advanced the whole industry forward, whether you're using a precision planting product or not. You can kind of point to, if you're seeing advanced monitoring in the cab or automated downforce control, you can kind of point back and say, hey, that kind of started with the precision planting 2020. It's an advanced everything forward in the last 15 years in the industry.
Very cool.
I'll just go off of that of the 2020. That would be mine too. I think almost everybody would say that here. Yeah. But the neatest thing about it is that, I mean, we're up to Gen 3 now, but you could have a Gen 1, a Gen 2, Gen 3 in your cab. Not necessarily need any other precision planting product, and it'll give you knowledge that you can change in real time. You don't have to take it back to your house, into your computer, and look up the data. It's like real time. So we were talking about how important the planter pass is. I mean, that's giving you the ability right away to change if something's broken, to see that you're not, you know, going acres and all of a sudden you don't have seed, various things like that. So it's just a very neat information overload probably for some people, but once they know that knowledge and know what to look for, that's why we've exceeded so much in the planter pass specifically. And Jenna, I know you talk a lot about the offense of planting. And that's exactly what the 2020 does. I'm just going to lead you into your offense statement.
So what Kate's saying, I know, I get like a little bit nerdy about it, but I can't take credit for it. It was actually somebody from Precision Planting that I was speaking to at Husker Harvest Days, and he said, the planting pass is the only time that the farmer gets to play offense. Everything else is defense and trying to protect that seed, like Bryce said, from anything Mother Nature throws at it, anything, like any obstacles throughout the growing season. And that just really stuck with me. And I didn't realize how all of that could lead back to the 2020 or the history on the 2020 monitor, but that's very cool. And I think that it speaks a lot about precision planting with that technology, having going back so many years, and then the whole industry's kind of adjusted to it. And you mentioned retrofitting parts, like you don't have to be 100% in on one brand or one anything to make it work for your farming operation. And I think that speaks a lot about precision planting and agriculture as an industry. I feel like overall, a lot of companies have the mindset, like we're all in this together. We're all in this for the farmer to make sure that the farmer can perform the best that they can. And I just think that's really cool. And it, as a farmer and a farm wife, that just, I guess, feels good to know that the companies have our back.
I find it fascinating that a company called Precision Planting doesn't even sell planters. Like, you guys are really out there to support farmers no matter what color of equipment they run. And we have found so much value in the 2020. I think it's been a great addition to, like, proving your point almost, too. Because, like, for example, the downforce map really shows you so much. And, like, will show you a part of the field where someone has driven a truck across. Like, how it affects the downforce and the pressure of the planter and everything. And it's really helped plead our case for a lot of the new things that we're trying on the farm, especially with having four families be involved and being able to use that information to really kind of like explain why. It's very valuable, the information that comes off of that for us to use.
We actually don't even have a 2020 monitor. We have one and we've been trying to get it onto our planter, but it hasn't worked out. And we needed a whole new wiring harness this year for the planter, and it was going to be a huge investment. And our planter is actually kind of outdated and needs upgraded. And we actually had a breakdown on it right when we started this year. And hearing all of this, I feel like I'm going to tell Levi, I think we need to make that upgrade sooner than later. He was thinking in the next 3 to 5 years, but I'm like, maybe it's time we get this information and start improving our planting paths right now.
Yeah, it's a great place to start. It's a great place to start. And to think you can achieve something better without having to, I know obviously your wiring harness and such, Jenna, would be a investment, but without having to make the bigger investment of a newer planter, you can get that, you know, get that information without having to make that big investment.
Exactly.
On our farm, I mean, we run an old, I don't know the year, an old white.
90s.
That's what we have. We have an old white too.
Yeah. She does the job of putting seed in the ground. But we also, we have a 2020 we have for years, Gen 2 in there. And it still is impactful of what's happening. Like Jared, my husband, will say he will not plant without it if it came down to it. And I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. But yeah, we're in the same boat. Do you upgrade? Do you not? What do you do? But I will say, like, the knowledge from the 2020 also helps determine what do we want on the new planter? What improvements do we want on it? What's important to us, specifically for our area and our operation? We know what fields we're going to be in. We know the tillage practices. So, yeah.
Okay, Bryce, you mentioned
Jenna,
about...
we can be white buddies.
Yes, absolutely. I feel like we're a generational farm and we have 36 inch rows. And so we're always like late to the new and upcoming technology. So I don't feel like I know anybody else that runs a white planter. So, okay, Bryce, you talked about the new technology that Precision brings and some of it that doesn't make it to market. Can you kind of go in on how they test new pieces of technology or equipment and then what the deciding factor is on what actually gets brought to market? Because I've been to Winter Conference. I know there's so much on the R&D side at Precision Planting, and I just think it'd be cool for our listeners to hear a little bit about that.
When we're doing product development, I guess first to have a project for consideration, it needs to kind of have the intersection of agronomic improvement for the farmer, economic impact then for the farmer, and then also be something that a dealer can service and kind of take to the marketplace, to the farmer. If you have a product that's so complicated that the dealer network isn't able to service it or so on, you know, that's not a good experience for the dealer or the farmer. So it's kind of looking at those things. So there are products that an engineer might look at and say, this is a really neat product. Look at how it works. Yeah, but it doesn't have any agronomic impact for a farmer. If it doesn't make a farmer's life better, if it doesn't make one of their passes in the field better, what's the point, right? And so that's the kind of the genesis of where that product development comes from. And if those things seem to be in sync, we'll go forward with the project. And from there, our engineering team uses the term fast to fail. Which what that means is we don't try to make products that fail. That's not what that means. But what it means is in the development process, if you iterate a lot and find things that don't work, you're finding ways that don't work. So they're not truly failures. They're just, hey, I found 20 ways today that this won't work. I'm getting closer to the one that does work. And so that's how product development kind of occurs, is instead of engineers sitting around for 3 weeks talking about what's the best way to do something, what we've found at Precision Planting, especially from a product development standpoint, is the best thing to do is make that thing, whatever it is, make a prototype and go try it. If it works, keep trying to refine it. If it doesn't work, try a different way. So from that point, let's say we get to a point where we say, hey, we think we've actually got something that's headed towards market. The research then splits and goes on two different pathways that sometimes overlap. But one pathway is the true, how do we make the product function well for the farmer? But the other one then is our research and development agronomists using that product in the field and doing trials with it. looking at, you know, whatever the product's geared towards, let's say it's a planner product and it's geared to improve emergence. Is it actually doing that compared to the status quo? And if not, well, all the effort you put into making a cool product per se over here, if it doesn't provide better emergence, if that's the goal, doesn't matter. Let's say it's a fertilizer application tool. If the trial of using this product while it's in development doesn't actually improve yield or fertilizer utilization, then that's only it's only half the equation to make a product that functions. It has to have that impact. So when those two things continue to intersect through the whole process, you end up with a product or a precision planting product per se. So then what's neat about that is once the product is released, then it will also be researched by a different set of agronomists, not to look at, is there agronomic impact? Does it work? But to look at, how do you best utilize it? So it's one of those things where there's products out there, but how do you get the most out of it? How do you use it on the farm? Because the product is only as good as how the farmer, whoever is using it, actually sets it or determines how it works or that type of thing. And so that's done by our dealers, and we do it corporately at a research farm we have in Illinois that's not a development farm, but a, hey, how do you get the most out of this product? So products like fertilizer control, what are the rates? What are the products that actually work best through it? So that's kind of the development process and then the post-development research that's done here. That's how we do that.
I'll just touch on that. Farmers are involved in the process from beginning to end, mm-hmm. because a lot of our R&D team also are farmers. So they kind of know what they need, what they don't need. We get the opportunity sometimes to have R&D out at our farm. And I remember the year, it was furrow force. I don't remember at what stage closing. It was. Yeah. So our closing system. And they were testing it out at the farm. And I remember it's like, okay, this pass, let's do 10 spacers. Okay, now take all those off. Now we're going to go down to 5 spacers. Okay, now every time I was like, this is such a tedious job. But it was really cool for the day I got to be there doing it. But the entire time when we're testing things is on actual farms with the farmers. So we have a few acres here that, you know, when Bryce said that product idea comes, make the prototype, go test it. So we can get out there quickly. But other times it's 100% with the farmers, which I think is really unique and cool and a great opportunity. So from beginning to end, which it doesn't really ever end.
Never.
It's always, right. always testing. The farmers are involved in that, which I think is a huge advantage on our side.
Absolutely. I think there is a lot of value in that to have the farmer mindset, because if you bring a new product to my husband, the first thing he is going to ask is, how much time is it going to save me, or is it going to save me time? And what does it cost? Like, is this worth the investment? Is it going to return an ROI on my operation? Because if it doesn't save me time or money, it's probably not worth it. And so to have that farmer mindset behind it, like you said, the engineer would get like so excited and think about it, but the engineer might not be thinking about what's the end user and how is this going to benefit the end user? So I'm sure you, Precision Planting has learned and based the business model off of that, that that's the best business decision on your end too, to save time and money as well.
Yeah.
And I want to throw in a shameless plug for the PTI farm tours in the summer, because we had such a blast last summer. You guys have like several weeks where you're inviting farmers out to see what you're working on. And my husband and I went last summer and just really mind blown at all of the things that are coming and things that are close to coming out to the industry too, and things that we would look to implement on our farm in the future. So highly recommend attending a PTI farm tour this summer.
Thanks, Mary Pat.
You betcha. Commercial girl here for you. Okay. So now we want to get a little more personal, and Bryce, you mentioned Believe in Better. But we'd like to get both of your takes, maybe starting with Kate this time, on what does Believe in Better mean to you?
Yeah, so I think Believe in Better, when it's a very broad blanket statement. And I think the most unique thing of it is that it is personal to every single individual who's reading that statement, listening to that statement, because it's wherever you're at in your journey, whether it's planting or personal life, things like that. believe in better is different in your stage of where you're at is different for every individual. And so as a company, Believe in Better, we want to support individuals no matter where they're at. And the better means wherever your starting point is, you can get better from there. So no matter where you're at, we're here to support you. And that's, I mean, we say that to our employees all the time, Believe in Better. Again, wherever you're at, we'll support you. Same with our dealers, farmers, industry as a whole. So I think it's just that unique statement that's like, I mean, from a farm standpoint, of course we can do better this season. What are we going to do on the personal employment side? What am I going to do to get better this year? So I guess that's what I don't know. We sat on that tagline, slogan, whatever you want to call it, for a long time. So,
yeah.
Yeah. What's it mean to you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would echo everything you said, Kate. Yeah. Obviously, we've talked about this more than the last 2 minutes.
Probably more than anybody else.
Yeah. You know, think about in life getting better. I'm a person who's just, I enjoy seeing progress. I sometimes could be accused of wanting perfection. And so
he's an Enneagram one.
Yeah. Thanks. Enneagram one says the Enneagram eight. So, you know, progress over perfection would have been a tagline for me personally. But Believe in Better.
We put it on a cup for him.
You did. But you know, personally, it means where there's opportunity to improve and be better. Let's take that. So it's an aspirational and inspirational statement, and kind of I agree with what Kate said. There's no hard line to it that says you're only good enough when you are at this stage. We can always self-improve. We can always get better. But for each person, each farm, each employee, because that's as much about, you know, we have it in our lobby. So when employees walk through the door each day, it has the full saying about believing in better. And you know, it's as much about employees as it is for farmers, dealers, customers. But hey, where there's opportunity to get better, let's work on that. Let's take that. What are those areas? It doesn't mean every area right now. I really like the first sentence of the fuller statement that we have, which says, believing in better is a mindset to pursue excellence in everything you do. So I like the terms in that, mindset and excellence. So let's have a mindset that says, I'm going to look for opportunities to get better. And when I see them, I'm going to take them and pursue that excellence. And so to me, it really means, how do we pursue excellence? How do we get better for each of us? And how do we inspire farmers to get better where they see areas of opportunity to improve on their farms as well?
I feel like we just need to stand up and clap. Like, that is so awesome. I feel like can resonate with not just Precision Planting, not just farmers, but like any industry, any walk of life, any part of life. Like, that's just such a great reminder for everybody. And mindset is so huge, like you said, Bryce.
Something else popped up into my head, and I think it came from Jason Webster at maybe one of the meetings. I don't remember which one, but he said the 7 or 6 most harmful words to any business is the way we've always done it. Mm. And that statement and Believe in Better just really resonated with me and our desire to keep doing better every year as farmers too. So we appreciate that a lot.
I think one of the things I like the most about it though, is it's not related to saying you'll be better when you buy our product, Mr. Mm-hmm. and Mrs. Farmer. But it's shooting for every interaction that a Precision Planting employee has with a farmer gives them the opportunity to get better. And it does not involve having to buy a product to achieve that. So as you've both mentioned, like PTI Farm, Winter Conference, dealer interactions, those are free things that we provide that we want folks to attend and take something away to improve whether or not they buy a product. And so that's the mindset, is really to serve the farmer. The farmer is the hero of the Precision Planting story. It is not to make it about, not make our priority that we want people to buy things. It's actually, we want to help farmers get better.
How did that switch to Believe in Better? How did that, in the whole the company embodying that whole statement, how did that shift the company culture?
Yeah. So I'll say from my point of view over the 14 years, let Kate chime in then for her a little over 3 years. I would say to that question, Jenna, I don't know that it shifted culture as much as it defined. So what I mean by that is, I think our culture has always been that, you know, we talk about selling through education, not through features and benefits. We talk about solving problems, and in many cases, solving problems a farmer doesn't know that he or she has. And so I don't know that when we said, hey, we're going to use this line, believe in better, that employees went, oh, huh, that changes how I'm going to do my job. I think they said, oh, yeah, that's what we do. That's a good way to say what we do. Huh, that takes the 20 minutes of how I try to explain what we do and puts it in a few words. So I think more than saying this is aspirational where we want to go, it was a definition of what we do. That'd be my perspective over the years. Okay.
Yeah, I think
your thoughts.
We had a lot of like tagline, slogan, get your boots dirty. There's a lot of them. Probably said a lot of them throughout this interview already. But I'm just picturing now we put them in a box, all these sayings, and we wrap it with a nice little bow. And the bow is believe in better. So that's how I see it. It didn't shift anything. I think it's just now we're all on something we can say.
We say the same thing.
Yeah.
I feel like anybody that's in college or about to join the workforce needs to look up internship opportunities at Precision Planting, because working in a positive environment and having that type of, culture that's already established is so huge to like your own success and your job and your own mental health and all the things. So very cool. Thank you guys for sharing that with us.
Jenna, what a great segue into one of our last couple of questions we have for you guys today. We would like to hear your one piece of advice you have for a young person in agriculture today.
I knew you guys were going to ask this question, so I thought about it over the weekend because I was like, I got to come up with something good I would tell somebody young. I will say I am young. So I feel like I'm talking to people. I'm in my late 20s, so I'm still young. I'm going to hold on to it.
You are. You are. I agree.
So I would say if I was telling anybody who is young or starting in agriculture, I would say do it and do it scared. And the reason I say do it scared is that we have made, my husband and I, Jared, on our farm specifically, some huge life decisions really early on. And I was scared. Every single one of them. I hit it really well because I'm an Enneagram 8. But it was scary. I mean, months after we got married was our first, all this property that we farm is going up for sale. What are we going to do? And in my mind, I was like, well, that's a lot of money. So no. And then we talked about it. And it's a investment piece for our future, for our farm, for our kids. I was scared, but we did it. Jared now farms full time. He enjoyed his job. He worked at Precision Planting. And that was a scary, hard decision because he enjoyed what he did. But we were scared, but we said yes, and we went for it. So I see now looking back the past 10 years of my young life of all those big decisions were very scary, but I'm so glad we did it and we said yes to it. Of course, you need to pencil it out. It needs to make sense in some way. I'm not telling everybody to just go say yes to everything. Pray about it, lean in, and then be scared and go do it. That's my big advice.
That's really good.
Great advice. I feel like I'm with you, Kate. You have to do it scared. And especially with land opportunity and stuff, it's a hard concept to accept, but that opportunity for that exact piece of land will probably only come up once in your lifetime. So it's like, you have to do it scared. If you wait, it's not, that opportunity probably isn't going to come again for your generation. So I feel like that's such great advice for young farmers.
Yeah. So I'll take it from a different angle, a few more years than Kate, but still in my 30s. And also coming at it from, the angle of a non-farm kid. Right. So when I graduated from high school, there was no, oh, well, dad has a farm. That's eventually something I'd be interested in. I would had that been an opportunity. People still say, you know, what's your dream job? And I said, I just want to drive tractors and combines and I miss it. And so that would be one piece of advice is if you love that, make sure you always have the opportunity because it's been a little bit too long since I've been in the tractor cab. But coming at it from not the farming side, but somebody interested in agriculture with a love for agriculture, but not with production agriculture farm opportunity in my life to take that on as a full-time job. The thing I would say is just be open to learn as much as you possibly can. So my advice would be from a non-ag, non-farm person is learn the breadth of things that, so you have a broad understanding of what farming is like and the nuances of it. Now, again, that doesn't mean you need to go get an agronomy degree if you're going to be working in an agricultural company as not an agronomist. But I would say a lot of the knowledge that I've had has helped me. And I look at, I'll just give one example. There's somebody who started at Precision Planting the same day that I did almost 14 years ago, who did not have a farm background, who the first day asked me what the difference was between a disc and a plow. And 14 years later, he has had an appetite to learn and to understand what the farming enterprises, the different types of farms, the different practices, what all that's like. And you would think he grew up on a farm 14 years later. So he's had an appetite to learn and understands those things. And it was that kind of that hunger to learn, might I say, the hunger to get better, believing in better, that now he's in a great spot and has great credibility with all the farmers he interacts with.
We are students of our crops, right? And I think plenty of the people listening to this podcast have no idea. Even like there's plenty of people out there that don't know the difference between a disc and a plow, and there's always something to learn. So yeah, being open to that is huge. I totally agree.
I think that's great advice for someone young and really anyone. Yeah. Don't put an age on it.
Yeah.
We all have something to learn. Agriculture is so diverse. It's like find an area and go learn about it.
I think the other plug I would put in just for the podcast listeners, sometimes when we think of agriculture, we think of farming or we think of an agronomist. There are plenty of jobs that are in agriculture, but not in production ag or equipment or agronomy, like finance, accounting, human resources, operations, those types of things. And so what I would just share for the podcast listeners that maybe are listening and saying, wow, I wonder, I don't know that much about farming, is to say farming is really cool. Like the technology that's out there, the community that's family oriented. That's, you know, there's a lot of faith required in farming. How do we get people who might be interested in finance to be interested in an agricultural company for their finance job? Now, like with that path, that's not saying you need to go take 20 classes about how to raise crops, but it's to understand this is a really neat industry. There's a lot of technology. This is a great industry to be in. I want to pursue my finance career, but within the confines of ag. Like that is another thing that I would say is you know, we're marketers at this point. We have the ag background, of course, both of us between Kate's farming operation and my kind of growing up with farms. But we're in marketing and we're glad we're in ag marketing. That's where we want to be. So I think there's a intersection of something that's not typically thought of as an ag career, but within an ag company. And it's really cool to serve that industry.
Yeah. If you're heading into college, go take Ag 101.
Yeah. Yep.
If I would have known I was going to marry a farmer, I for sure would have been more intentional in my college classes.
Yeah.
Well, Mary Pat, is there anything else you want to add or ask?
I think just a quick thank you, but you had the fun question for them. If you still want to ask them, do you remember what it is?
Oh, yeah. Can you guys tell us what your favorite cut of beef is?
Oh, it depends on the day.
Touche.
They're all my recipes.
Relatable.
Yeah. I mean, if I had to pick like the perfect cut, I'd probably go with like a really good filet.
I would, I would go with a ribeye. I also eat a lot of ground beef because, you know, 3, 5, and 8-year-old children. And, you know, I'd ask Emily, but we probably 3 or 4 pounds of ground beef a week. I mean, Kate's profited from that, from my family, needing lots of ground beef, but I would prefer the ribeye. That would probably be the one I would pick.
I love it. Ground beef is so underrated. Did you know the average American only keeps like 1 to 2 pounds in their freezer, if any at all?
Oh, really?
That's crazy.
They don't know what to do with it. And I, you guys can probably relate. I'm like, what are we having for supper? I don't know. I'm going to thaw some ground beef. I'll figure it out later. It's kind of like going to Target. Target tells you what you need. The ground beef will tell me what it wants to be later. Like, you just figure it out.
Oh, I love that. I
always have ground beef cooked in the fridge.
Yeah.
Same, ready to go.
Same here.
Smart. I have a friend that's like, Jenna, on your maternity leave, I'm coming over and we're going to make a ground beef cookbook. Like, you need to, come on, think, be creative with ground beef. Teach people how to use it. So, yeah, we could definitely spinball ideas.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Well, thank you guys so much for being on with us today. We really appreciate you taking the time and for believing in our podcast here that we're starting up. Yeah. We really appreciate you.
Yes, it says a lot that you all had enough faith in us to say, yep, we'll dive in and kind of support you from without even knowing what you're going to produce. So we sure appreciate that. And for, like Mary Pat said, believing in us and what we do for agriculture.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Thank you.
Thanks again to Bryce and Kate for being here and to Precision Planting as a whole for believing in this podcast, believing in farmers, and believing in better as a way of life.
We truly appreciate their time today and their support of our podcast. We hope you enjoyed the time, and we're proud to have Precision Planting as our launch sponsor for Beyond the Crops.